the story, we could get a little, I mean, dark here sometimes, a little tough. You know, when our PO is down there in the darker regions of the big city, that's where we are. And it's 77 or something. And he has given up. Well, he was never into drugs, really, and he gave up drinking because he thought it was boring. But here he is now. He got some hunch, and he's working in the subway. He passes by Östermalmstorg subway station in the escalator. He meets a long-haired guy, and long-haired guys in Östermalmstorg subway station at that time were generally drug dealers. So what you have, what you want, we got dialogue here, comics, okay. And Pierre says, just some got some good clean organic hashish, and the guy says, of course, I got this from Lebanon. That's the best. Okay, give me a piece of gram or something, and anything else you want? Got acid, got speed. No, I'm actually not into drugs, and I'm sensitive to this, so this is like a trip for me once a year or so. And then he, okay, the deal is done, and I look back and forth, just checking out, there's no police there, and they're on their, each one on their way. A little later, Peo is sitting in the ticket office there in one subway station, selling tickets, checking tickets, his usual job. It's night, he often had night work. It's dark outside, it's winter, I guess. And you know, they have, or it's autumn, they have their band, and it's winter, actually. And this new lady, could be January. It's a bit, he's not sure about her. I mean, and then this flutist in the band. Anyway, what he did was that when he came back, because he was just on a lunch break or something, when he came back, or this was the next station to work at, because he's an extra, going a little here, a little there, he just slipped into the lunch room where you can cook yourself a cup of coffee or so, cooked up a cup of tea, rather, and throw that lump into it that you just bought and drank it. And well, when you do that, he knew from before by practical experience, you have to be a little bit careful so you don't take too much, because you need to take more than when you smoke it. So, but too much and it will stay there for quite some hours. You can be a bit almost tripping around. So he took a little much, maybe not too much, but maybe a little too much for working the work. But it was peaceful evening, not so many passengers, customers. He just sat there, and he had just been at the library on his way here, and had borrowed a book, or maybe some couple of days before, I think it was the same day, and I borrowed a book about the human body with pictures of freeze-dried dead human bodies or something like that, that they had cut very finely and different layers. And he just sits there. And now this tea had its effect. And I'm telling the story, but you should just show this. It could be a little humoristic. And he's sitting there and, wow, looking at these big pictures and big bookcases in that little glass hut. A person passing by now and then, but they just show up their monthly cards. So, you could be drunk out of your skull working that job, and some kids were, but not he. But this was like a sacrifice he made of some kind of experience of introspection he needed once a year or so. Wow. He looked at the brain, the heart, the bones, and he saw, looking at those pictures, this is a machinery, an alien machinery. There are these pipes, hoses, pump, motor burning fuel with air. Who made this? What's going on? This is my body. And yes, he had worked a couple of years before, a couple of years earlier, in the surgical department of a hospital, and seen these bodies inside being opened up, fixed and put together again. It's an educative experience. But now he saw something else, something more. Not only that this body is a machine, but it's such a complex, ingenious unfathomably advanced form of machine, with all these little parts fit together perfectly well. And with electronic circuits in it, cameras, microphones, of a completely fantastic construction. Just study it and I look how it works in there. How the ear picks up sound. And as he was looking like that, he's sitting there. It's almost a little scary because, you know, when you find all of a sudden, let's say you find an object on the ground, you pick it up, open it, and it contains an otherworldly, alien, unknown form of technology. You will be afraid, what is this? What is this thing doing? Who makes this? This is not earthly, this is not human constructed. That's the feeling he had sitting there. And now, yeah, he's a bit on the dark side now, meaning, no, he's not, as I said, he's not a drinker or a drugger or... living life down in the dark dungeons. But he's a little depressed, thoughtful, contemplating, and this is part of it, this session here. And he's going home and he sits there in his armchair in his apartment up on fifth floor, looking out through the window, the houses on the other side, windows lit, at home. Listening to David Bowie's latest album, Heroes, or Low. Appreciating the magical times he lived in. Creatively, artistically magical, what things these musicians did with sound and music. Layered in ways that no one had ever done before. No one ever thought about doing with music before. And this is what he felt for doing. This was his thing. Opening new levels, new gates in art, new styles, new experiments. But at the same time, a little put off by artists who simply made it into a conceptual performance. But real art that does what art does at its finest. But what is that? And he was a little bewildered looking around. His favorite Leonardo da Vinci and Raphael and those old masters, their allegorical storytelling art, he liked that so much. But then all the experiments of the 20th century, early, Dalí, of course, being the master of that, in his eyes at least. So there he is, experimenting and having freedom to do so. And now being able to listen to very progressive and creative experimental music that just took everything step by step forward, new steps, interesting. That's where he was, and he took all that inspiration and wanted to put it into his own art. But then he sat down that night and thinking, again a bit melancholic, but what is it that I want to say? What do I have to say with my art? And he didn't know that yet. He had started reading not just ordinary psychology or philosophy books, but mysticism, following as he felt was needed, his intuition, deeper calls from within, and his search for answers, search for the meaning, the truths. But yes, first of all, a happy life. So there he is. And here he is. Forty-eight years later, or something like that. Saying to himself, slightly laughing, that yeah, now I know what to say with my heart. Now I'm ready to start. It took 48 years, but well, that was worth it. Because we've got a good story here.